When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Islanders Award Winners, the podcast examining seasons in which a New York Islander took home a major NHL award. I am your host, Dan Saracini. Today, we'll focus on Al Arbour during the difficult, triumphant, and disappointing 1978-79 season, for which he was awarded the Jack Adams Trophy as NHL Coach of the Year. Lighthouse Hockey is SB Nation's home for New York Islanders news and discussion. You can find all of our podcasts, including our flagship show, Islanders Anxiety, and Weird Islanders, the podcast, by searching Islanders Anxiety in any podcasting app of your choice. At patreon.com/islandersanxiety, you can subscribe monthly to receive ad-free episodes, bonus podcasts, and more. And as always, thank you for listening. And now, on to Al Arbour, Jack Adams Trophy, 1979. Yet Arbour appears to be a man under pressure, some of it self-inflicted. His standards are so high that often his players believe their best is not good enough. Gerald Eskenazi, New York Times, March
25th, 1979. Now Turnbull clears it ahead to McDonald. McDonald ready, he scores! McDonald wins it! The Leafs win it!
And the Leafs win it! 2-1 and a goal by Lanny McDonald.
Lanny McDonald has had such a tough time of it in this series, scoring goals. He started to come out of his slump the other night in Toronto, and now he comes through with one of the biggest goals of his career as Lanny McDonald and the Leafs win it in overtime. And a very dejected Glenn Resch, a dejected band of Islanders, leave the ice here at the Nassau Coliseum. Resch throws his stick in disgust. Lanny McDonald being congratulated. Jim Gregory, the general manager. Show them how you feel there, Jimmy Gregory, the general manager of the Leafs. You can see from the expression on his face. The Leafs, for the first time since 1967, go on to the Stanley Cup semifinals. And now these two gallant teams line up to congratulate each other. It's been a rough, bruising series decided moments ago on the goal, Dan Kelly, by Lanny McDonald of the Leafs.
That goal, scored by Toronto's Lanny McDonald on April 29, 1978, would haunt Al Arbour and the New York Islanders for the next year. The Islanders, who finished with 111 points and in first place in the Patrick Division, looked primed to take home the Stanley Cup after three straight trips to the semifinals. Instead, they lost to a Maple Leafs team that finished 19 points behind them and in third place in their division, and who employed a level of physicality and straight-up dirtiness that threw the Islanders completely off their game. The Game 7 overtime score, which eliminated them in the quarterfinal round of the playoffs, strengthened the Islanders' reputation as playoff failures, regular season beasts that simply couldn't get the job done when it counted. The shock of the loss was immediate and hard to take. A, quote, choked up Arbour told the New York Times, quote, "I guess it just wasn't meant to be." The narrative would eventually be that the shady Leafs just bullied the Islanders for seven games. But at the time, Arbour gave Toronto credit for playing a tight game against his club. Quote, "The Leafs checked us very well, and if you had to find any difference in this series, it might be that they outworked us." Goalie Chico Resch, who was beaten by McDonald on the series-winning goal, was even more blunt. Quote, "We were really ready to set sail, and then it all came crashing down." Arbour would spend the next year pushing the Islanders to be better, even perfect, in every single game. For his efforts, the Islanders would have their best regular season in franchise history. Players would hit incredible individual highs, and he would be awarded his only Jack Adams Trophy as NHL Coach of the Year. But it would all come crashing down again in a loss even more devastating than the one against Toronto. Despite the loss in the quarterfinals, the Islanders were considered a Stanley Cup contender heading into the 1978-79 season. One of the things they needed to eliminate was the complacency that they were prone to exhibit during the regular season. There seemed to be a constant battle going on between the ultra-talented team and their own ability to keep their heads in the game. At the front of the fight was Arbor, who paced hallways, chain-smoked, and barely slept between games in a constant effort to keep his team on their toes. Quote, "I tell my players to expect the unexpected. Sometimes they think I'm going to yell at them, and I don't say anything. Then there are days when I'll wake up and feel great, but I know they need to be chewed out. So I'll say to myself, well, put on your mean face and start grumbling. And I know the guys are wondering, what's wrong now?" Arbor knew what buttons to push on his players to alternately win their trust and, sometimes, make himself the target of their anger. He could be close or distant with them, depending on the player and the situation. He was a quiet man with a dry sense of humor and an appreciation for the offbeat, such as the team's traditional pie-in-the-face attack on somebody's birthday. To many, Arbor was an almost comically conservative figure. He was described by Newsday's Pat Calabria as a man who, quote, "wears dark suits and white shirts and ties that look like they were given as Christmas presents." In the New York Times, Gerald Eskenazi painted a picture of a coach who, quote, "dresses in a room he shares with a washing machine, among the dirty paint and aluminum insulation of the Islanders' practice rink, which was located behind an airplane plant in Farmingdale." Eskenazi wrote, quote, "Al Arbor, no one calls him by his real first name, Alger, is 46 years old, has a wife, 4 children, a 21-foot boat, and a home in the suburbs," which is a sentence that could accurately describe almost every adult male living on Long Island both then and now. His true fashion trademark, of course, were his thick glasses, which he wore at all times, even as a player, for 3 Stanley Cup winners. Arbor got his nickname of Radar, not because of Gary Berghoff's bespectacled character on MASH, but because of the coach's surprising ability to maneuver his way around a space even when he didn't have them on. While he didn't look it on the surface, Al Arbor was an innovator. He was the master strategist who could design one of the most lethal power plays in the league, as well as schemes to render superstars ineffective for an entire playoff series. He gave his players written tests throughout the seasons. In 1975, he tasked each of them for an essay on how to beat the Rangers in the playoffs. While his 2-hour practices could be very hard, he often elected to have a coach of the day run the workout. He encouraged players to work out beefs in private meetings so that internal strife could be squashed quickly. Maybe his most impactful innovation was the use of video to analyze and scout nearly every player in the NHL. In the 1970s, watching tapes of other teams' games was almost unheard of, especially in hockey. But Arbor, aided by his wife Claire, who would record the games for him, used the videos to create books and reports on opponents' tactics, such as breakouts, forechecking, and penalty killing. His booklets on each team weren't just specific to that club, but could be read as a how-to book on the game itself. To a man, the Islanders players felt that Al was sort of surrogate father figure who encouraged them to be the best they could while also being tough on them, whether they felt they needed it or not. He was always aware, again, through the invaluable help of Claire, of who was going through what, who had a new baby on the way, who had family in town, etc. Al cared about them, but that didn't mean he was going to let the players get lax on the job. The downside was that players often believed that their best simply wasn't good enough for their coach, and that victories meant less if they didn't get them the, quote, right way. And that was just how Al Arbor liked it. The first 3 games of the Islanders' 1978-79 season were a true roller coaster. A 2-2 tie in Buffalo, followed by a wild 10-7 loss in Toronto, got everyone's immediate attention. But a 3-1 home win over Montreal, highlighted by newcomer John Tinelli's first NHL goal, was a welcome relief. They followed that up with wins against the Penguins and Rangers, and a tie against the Flyers. Around this time, Arbor also signed a contract extension with the Isles. He had 2 years left on his current deal, but the new contract added 5 additional seasons and included an unspecified raise. Team's partners had decided that, despite the playoff losses, Arbor was their man going forward. Those partners were in a much more solid position than they had been in years past. The new principal owner was John Pickett, who together with general manager Bill Torrey, would navigate the team through the financial minefield planted by original owner Roy Bowe, who owed various entities, including the Rangers, about $38 million. Bowe had been suspended from making any transactions by the NHL after he sold Nets star Julius Erving to the 76ers in order to pay for the team's entry into the NBA. Pickett and Torrey straightened out their finances and formulated a plan to keep the franchise afloat, which was a relief to the league, the team's brass, and its players. Back on the ice, the Islanders weren't solid at all. They had surrendered 18 goals against in their first four games of the season, and 33 in their first eight, and Al Arbour was not happy. After an 8-5 loss in Atlanta, he lamented, quote, "Defensemen aren't helping the forwards, and the forwards aren't helping the defensemen, and nobody's helping the goalies. Nobody's helping anybody." Arbour told Newsday's Joe Gergen about his team's wild scores, quote, "I think we're in the wrong division. We should be in the NBA." After a 4-1 loss to the Bruins on November 2, 1978, things turned around in a big way. The Islanders would lose just two games in the next 2 months. What would become a 15-game unbeaten streak started with a 4-1 win over Washington on November 4th. Arbour called a 4-2 home victory over the 12-2-2 Atlanta Flames on November 11th, and a 5-3 win at Madison Square Garden the next day over the Rangers, who were right behind the Flames at the top of the Pacific Division, the, quote, "biggest weekend of the season so far." But the old coach hadn't quite gone totally soft. 2-2 tie in Colorado ticked Arbour off when compared to the previous two games. He said of the Islanders, quote, "They worked their butts off Saturday and Sunday. Then tonight they just went through the motions. I guess they didn't want it bad enough. They didn't work together. They worked individually. Some of them didn't work at all." Ouch. To take a 4-2 win over the Capitals, they needed two goals in 15 seconds. One from Mike Bossy and one from Richie Hansen, the first native Long Islander to play for the Isles, who was filling in for Brian Trotty, who had been injured in the win over the Flames a few weeks earlier. The Islanders blew out the Flyers 8-2 in Arbour's 200th win as their coach. In that one, Bossy and Dennis Potvin scored goals just 7 seconds apart in the third period. The Islanders' streak was now a modest 6-0-1, but Arbour wondered aloud if, quote, "We had begun to believe that we could just blow teams away. We got out of position all the time. Luckily, we caught ourselves in time. We had a meeting to put our priorities in order." As the calendar flipped to December, the Islanders were 9-0-2 in their last 11, tying a team record for an unbeaten streak. Goalie Chico Resch, who played in a 5-5 tie in LA, was 9-0-3 in his last dozen starts, which was also a team record. Yet Arbour still wasn't satisfied. Before the game against the Kings, he made the decision to sit Bob Nystrom for the first time in the rugged winger's career to send a message that scoring slumps wouldn't be tolerated by anyone, even fan and team favorites. The coach was not in a better mood after a 3-3 tie against Pittsburgh a few nights later, either. The Islanders pumped 28 shots on goal during the second period and 45 for the game. Arbour lamented that, quote, "It was a great game for the fans, wide open. I don't think I remember one solid body check in the whole game." They got back in the win column with a 7-1 win over the Blues, in which Mike Bossy had a hat trick, and Nystrom broke out of his slump with two goals of his own. Beating the Leafs 3-2 two nights later somewhat avenged their 10-7 loss in the season's first week and brought their unbeaten streak to an unbelievable 15 games, with 12 victories and 3 ties. Their record of 17-3-5 led the entire NHL, a far cry from the sluggish start that had them locked in the middle of the Patrick Division. Around this time, Arbour was named an assistant coach to the NHL All-Star team, which would play the Soviet Union in a 3-game Challenge Cup series later that season. Arbour would assist his former Blues head coach and current Canadiens boss Scotty Bowman, who would act as head coach for the squad. A meeting of the two coaches in Montreal would be the end of the Islanders' run. The Habs won 4-3 with goalie Ken Dryden turning away 3 prime Islanders' chances to tie the score late in the third. Although his team wasn't as crisp as they had been, Arbour didn't sound mad after the game or about the end of the unbeaten streak, just disappointed at the missed opportunity. Quote, "We'll start over again. This team is together now more than at any other time before, working hard. They win because they have spirit." He was right. They would start another streak, this time going 8-0-2 to end the calendar year. But Arbour still saw tendencies he didn't like. After a 5-5 tie against the Kings, secured thanks to a goal by Jerry Hart with 2 minutes to go, Arbour said, quote, "Everybody that plays us, you're going to be sure they're going to be up for us. You can't play 10 minutes of hockey out of 60. After beating the Red Wings and tying St. Louis, the coach had a similar lament, saying, quote, I guess we deserved our fate. We can't wait until the third period to generate things. A rematch against the Blues, this time at home, ended in a 5-1 win for the Islanders. They were 24-7 overall and had an unblemished 11-0-5 record at Nassau Coliseum. Chico Resch, who got the win, was undefeated in his last 17 starts. But Arbour's mind was on perfection. He extorted his team after a tied first period that, quote, "We want 14 hits per period. That's your quota." Once his team started laying the body on the Blues, St. Louis folded. That set up a game against the Rangers 2 days before Christmas, 1978. The regional rivals were both winning, but were on different paths. The Rangers, under new coach Fred Shiro, were a collection of raw talent just learning how to play within a team concept. The Islanders were the epitome of team concept. When their collection of all-stars played their system to its fullest, there was almost no stopping them. Arbour's philosophy was, quote, "If you're in good position defensively, then you're in good position offensively." Meanwhile, Shiro was trying to get defenseman Ron Greschner to, like, play more defense. Arbour's team had no time for those who weren't willing to be part of the program. He told the New York Times, quote, "We choose players who fit our system of discipline. If it was a question of choosing a flake who was an outstanding player or a lesser man who could be taught, we would take the lesser player and teach them to adapt." The game itself ended in a blowout for the ages. Brian Trottier had 5 goals and Mike Bossy 2, as the Islanders scored a franchise record 7 times in the second period of a 9-4 win. However much progress they thought they had made, the Rangers were stuck in last place in the Patrick Division, 7 points behind the division-leading Isles. The Islanders finished the year with 2 more wins, a 5-1 victory over the Leafs, in which they outshot Toronto 51-20, and a 10-4 butt-whooping in Atlanta, in which Bossy had his second hat-trick of the month. The Islanders were 7-0-1 in their last 8 and had opened up a 9-point lead over Philadelphia in the division and 11 points over the Rangers. Things were going so well that even Arbour was in a joking mood, saying after the rout over the Flames, quote, "I gave them hell for playing so loose." The calendar flipped to January 1979, and guess what? Yep, another Islanders win and another Mike Bossy hat trick, this time in a 9-0 dismantling of Vancouver. Bossy led the NHL in goals with 33. Trottier's 4 points pushed him past Guy Lafleur for the league-leading scoring. Chico Resch stretched his unbeaten streak to 20 games and amazingly picked up his first shutout of the season. The Islanders were still unbeaten at home, sitting at 19-0-0. Arbour said after the game that he, quote, "always looks for something to complain about. But if he had something in mind, he must have stayed in the locker room." A 3-2 loss to the Flyers on January 4th snapped their winning streak at 7 and Trottier's point streak at 17. With the Islanders' first loss in 11 games, and just their second in their last 27. They won the rematch 2 days later in a game that featured a massive brawl set off by Philly's Dave Hoyta charging Mike Bossy and Clark Gillies, then in his second season as Islanders captain, stepping in for his attacked linemate. Both benches cleared, 12 players were ejected, 166 penalty minutes were handed out, and the whole melee lasted about 40 minutes. It was ugly, but it was another game the Islanders were capable of winning. Arbour said afterward, quote, "It was obvious what they were trying to do in the third period. So Gillies did what he was supposed to do, show Hoyta and the rest of them that they can't push us around. That's a team, all for one and one for all." At 26-5-7, the Islanders were indeed the best team in the NHL at the season's halfway point. While their success could mostly be attributed to the players executing Arbour's defensive game plan to perfection, the coach admitted to making adjustments to his normally rigid style. He became more sensitive to his players' needs and after an early season meeting, vowed to tell them a day before if they were going to be in the next game's lineup. The suspense had been frustrating them, and Arbour was open to making changes in his tactics. Quote, "You have to adjust to the modern player." The Islanders waxed the hapless Caps 6-2 on January 16th, with Dennis Potvin netting a hat trick, but Arbour admitted to noticing a worrying trend in his team. Quote, "We're not executing. We only played as well as we had to against Washington." He was right to be concerned. A 5-3 loss at Madison Square Garden to the now second-place Rangers was an overall poor showing for his players. He said afterward, quote, "We were lousy in all departments, and they played well in all departments. In fact, they outplayed us completely." Turns out the Rangers, who had been steadily climbing the division rankings since their last game against the Islanders, were getting a little tired of hearing how much these cocky guys from the suburbs enjoyed beating them. The Islanders would reel off three more wins despite injuries to Dennis Potvin, Stefan Pearson, John Tinelli, and Jerry Hart. But a rematch against the Rangers would go even more sideways. The 7-2 loss was the Islanders' first at home that season, snapping a 23-game unbeaten streak, and was the Rangers' first win at Nassau Coliseum in almost 3 years. Clark Gillies was left speechless afterwards. Lauren Henning called the game, quote, chaos. Arbour was surely seething inside, but outwardly, he tried to laugh the loss off, saying, quote, we couldn't get out of our own way. It was a real clinker. The only thing I can say is that it was a team effort. He was in less of a joking mood after a 5-4 loss to Minnesota a few nights later. The Islanders had given up 12 goals in a span of 2 games, and the coach seemed to know why. Quote, there's no fluidity out there. Our passes aren't connecting, and nothing's getting through. But problems are made to be solved, and we'll solve them. They solved at least some of them in a 4-1 win over the fading Flyers and their new coach, Pat Quinn. But a 4-4 tie with the Bruins and a 5-4 loss to the Blackhawks to start February had the Islanders in what defenseman and assistant coach Burt Marshall called the blahs. Bill Torrey, on the other hand, wasn't in the mood to be cute. The Islanders GM called the slump a crisis and said straight out that he was worried. He even went as far as calling out by name Billy Harris, his first ever draft pick with the Islanders, who had gone 24 games without a goal. They had dropped to second place overall in the NHL with a 33-9-10 record, and for all their early season victories and scoring prowess of their top players, the Islanders had not been able to increase their lead in the division and suddenly looked very mortal. The season was a little more than half over, but Chico Resch put their situation in very blunt terms. Quote, if we don't win this year, what makes anyone think we'll win next year or the year after? The Islanders' anxieties were placed on hold for a week while a team of NHL All-Stars played the Soviet national team in the 1979 Challenge Cup at Madison Square Garden. The NHLers took Game 1 4-2, but lost Games 2 and 3 by scores of 5-4 and 6-0. In addition to Torrey being the team's chairman and Arbour being on coach Scotty Bowman's staff, Trottier, Bossy, Gillies, and Dennis Potvin all suited up for the NHL team. Although they ended up on the losing end, the Islanders' contingent showed well, scoring goals in each of the first 2 games. Bowman wasn't about to mess with the already made Trio Grande line, and the Islanders' top unit combined for 2 goals in the first period of Game 2.
Possession in Soviet territory. Gilly fires. They score! Dick, I'm not sure. It may have gone out to Soviet defenseman. Mark Gilly's made a good play. This has been a super line for the NHL. A 3 from the Islanders. Now, I'll go to Gilly's right here. Okay.
Now I'm sure. Okay, 20. Just shoot it towards the net. That's a tough line. Three great hockey players.
Brian gets the goal. Brian Trottier.
The largely Canadian roster of NHL stars tried to intimidate the Russians with heavy body checks and physical play, but none of it worked. The Soviets weren't shy about showing these pros how good they were, and the NHLers were in a state of shock at the loss. The better team won, and Torrey knew what had to change if the North American game was going to keep up. Quote, in the future, I feel our preparations have to be the equal of the Soviets. That's step one. They're the best conditioned athletes in the world. When we come back from the break, the Islanders charge towards the end of a bumpy season and into a house of horrors. The Islanders returned to NHL action on February 13th, but one person was noticeably absent. Al Arbour. Coach missed practice in order to rest his ailing back. Assistant Burt Marshall ran things for a short time, and the team stormed out of the gate with a 6-1 win over Colorado. but they followed that up with a 2-1 loss to Buffalo that hinged on an unfortunate bounce that got away from defenseman Jerry Hart and turned into a 3-on-1 for the Sabres. Even before that play, Arbor was irritated that seemingly only half his forwards were producing regularly. In an unusual move, he called out a few by name and even benched old reliable and original Islander, Lauren Hennig. Two straight dominant wins, 8-3 over LA and 6-1 over St. Louis, weren't enough to make Arbor entirely happy. Mike Bossy became the fastest player to score 100 goals in his career in the win against the Kings, hitting the mark in just 129 games. But his coach was looking at the bigger defensive picture. Quote, "I must admit these guys have me baffled because they haven't been playing the man that well. Even the blowout over the Blues wasn't enough to impress Arbor. Quote, "We can't fall asleep for two periods like that all the time and then turn it off. We can't do that against the better clubs and still win." After beating the Red Wings at Nassau Coliseum, thanks to Bossy's 49th and 50th goals of the season, the Islanders lost again to the Rangers at Madison Square Garden. The 3-2 defeat was the now infamous game in which Dennis Potvin laid a clean hit on Rangers forward Ulf Nilsson, who hit a rut in the ice at the same time and came up with a broken ankle. More important than lame chance and forgotten historical details was the fact that it was the third straight loss for the Islanders against their less talented but more disciplined rivals, who weren't going away. A 7-3 win over Montreal on the final day of February 1979 saw Clark Gillies net a hat trick, which included his 30th goal of the season. The major victory put the Islanders just 4 points behind the Habs for first place overall in the NHL, with 19 games remaining. The game was exactly the type Arbor, an old stay-at-home defenseman, wanted to see out of his club. Quote, "Defense clutched, grabbed, and rode the Canadiens off the puck. Everybody was in the game all the way, all the time. That's the only way to play this game." The Islanders were 6-2 in their last 8 games as the calendar flipped to March. Good, right? Wrong. After they lost the first half of a home-at-home against the Flames 3-2, getting outshot 35-17 and getting muscled all around the ice, Al Arbor finally boiled over. His frustrations about his team's inconsistencies, about his roster's lack of scoring outside of their top line, about their non-commitment to team defense, and about the lingering pain over the previous spring's loss to the Leafs had become too much to bear. Arbor summed up the lackluster loss to the Flames saying, quote, "Nothing. They did nothing. They had a big game against the Canadiens, and they got big heads. It was a disgrace. Both of our goalies have been keeping us in every game lately. They ought to sue the other players for non-support." But that wasn't all. Arbor kept going, eventually getting to his personal feelings about his club's status. Quote, "What can I say? I'm worried. I really am. I'm worried, and I think they should be too. It doesn't seem like anyone wants to sacrifice anymore. I don't know what to do. I've tried everything, haven't I?" He finished by trailing off. Quote, "If we don't get the consistency, I mean, we can't win one day and lose the next, you know?" Arbor might not have thought he was reaching his players, but they did take note of his words and his whispering to himself and the piles of cigarette butts he was leaving around. Dennis Potvin said after the Flames' loss of the only NHL coach he had ever had, quote, "I know this is eating me up. I can't imagine what it's doing to him." Things were not about to get any better. Bill Torrey chose to make no deals at the 1979 trade deadline, and after a 4-2 win over Atlanta, Clark Gillies contracted chickenpox. He would miss about 2 weeks, derailing a season in which he had already scored 30 goals. Meanwhile, Arbor decided to take his complaints directly to his players, and they weren't happy about it. After a 3-2 loss to Buffalo, the coach went around the locker room, figuratively and literally pointing his finger at each and every player and threatening to make changes and call-ups from the minors. At least a couple now felt compelled to go to the press, asking the New York Times, quote, "Doesn't management ever say anything good about us?" Another said, "I can't stand this tag of we're losers when we lose one game." A 2-3-1 streak and none of Arbor's lineup changes were helping his team's mental state. Wayne Merrick told Newsday, quote, "I don't know what to say. I want to win so badly. I don't want to get beat in the playoffs again. It means so much to me." After a 5-5 tie with the Blues, Arbor said his team was spoiled. Merrick and other support Islanders stepped up in a big way in a 7-1 win over Chicago at the Coliseum. The center scored twice and had two assists in a rare game in which Bossy and Trottier didn't score. Even Arbour said he saw, quote, a lot of positive things out there. But now there was another problem. The Rangers were still rolling, and now had gained the ability to beat the mighty Montreal Canadiens handily, racking up four straight victories over the reigning champs. Arbour said his team couldn't get caught up in scoreboard watching, while Lauren Henning was more blunt, saying, quote, to heck with the Rangers. We've got our own game to play. The win over the Blackhawks was a springboard to a 10-game unbeaten streak. Arbour was pleased with a feisty 4-4 tie with Boston, and the Islanders won the second game of the back-to-back 7-2, with Mike Bossy netting his fourth hat-trick of the season and Trottier grabbing four assists. The win also put them just 2 points behind the Habs for first overall. Arbour proclaimed that his team had its enthusiasm back. That feeling no doubt grew after a 5-2 win over the Rangers on St. Patrick's Day. The Islanders hit the 100-point mark, Bossy scored his 58th goal of the season, and Trottier hit 116 points with three more assists. Dennis Potvin's goal and two assists gave him 89 points on the season. With 11 games remaining in the regular season, the Islanders now had a 16-point lead over their rivals in the Patrick Division. That win, plus a disjointed 5-3 victory over Minnesota, put them 2 points ahead of the Canadiens for first overall. The Habs had won earlier in the day, but Arbour kept that detail to himself, choosing to withhold the scoreboard update from his players until after the game. Quote, we just got to take care of our own business. They did just that with a win over the Habs in Montreal 4 nights later that was a major leap forward. The Islanders clinched a second straight Patrick Division crown, and their lead for first place was now 4 points over the Canadiens. Dennis Potvin's game-winning goal made him just the second defenseman in NHL history to score 30 goals in a season. Meanwhile, Brian Trottier had two assists in the game to overtake a scoreless Guy Lafleur for the league's scoring lead with 119 points. Finally, Mike Bossy added to his league-leading goal number by scoring his 59th goal of the season. By the next day, the players were right back at practice, which their coach started by telling them, quote, okay, the celebration's over. The next time you celebrate will be after the Stanley Cup. Bossy would get his 60th goal in a 3-3 tie with the Penguins, the first of back-to-back deadlocks with Pittsburgh. The scores gave the Islanders a 10-game unbeaten streak. Outside of the locker room, Al Arbour's team, still just in their seventh season, had racked up one of the best records in the history of the National Hockey League. With a lopsided and costly 6-1 loss to Chicago, they had a half-hour-long closed-door meeting after the game. Even Mike Bossy's 61st goal of the season, tying Reggie Leach's league record for a right winger, did little to alleviate the mood. With 7 games remaining, the loss dropped them to second place behind the Canadiens. Arbour was understandably fuming afterwards, saying, quote, if they don't want to win badly enough, there's nothing I can do. Even Chicago coach Bob Pulford, an old teammate of Arbour's from their playing days, was shocked at the score. Quote, we played extremely well, but I don't know what happened to them. Games like these are what drive people like Arbour and me crazy. After a 2-0 shutout of the Sabres, the Islanders picked a hell of a time to lose their first game to the Washington Capitals in 5 years. The Caps' 6-4 win was their first victory over the Islanders in 19 games. Bossy set the record for goals by a right winger by scoring his 62nd and 63rd of the season, but Billy Smith was pulled from the game, putting the Islanders' nearly unshakable goalie rotation in jeopardy. After the game, Arbour chose not to speak to reporters, letting his players answer for their latest disappointment. Chico Resch said, quote, all the teams in the league now are starting to play us more physically. We've lost our aggressiveness. We better get it back soon. The Islanders now trailed Montreal by 3 points for first overall with just 4 games to go. So what happened? They won all four, because of course they did. The run started with a 3-2 comeback win over the Flames that saw Billy Smith get his game right and Billy Harris score his 15th goal of a tough season. The next 2 wins were both over Philadelphia, one a 3-1 victory at the Spectrum and then a 9-2 demolition at the Coliseum. Mike Bossy scored 4 goals in that one, actually had a 5th called back by a referee's quick and merciful whistle in the 3rd period. Their final regular season game was also a victory, a 5-2 win over the Rangers at Madison Square Garden. But another game played a few thousand miles away was of equal importance. During the second intermission, injured defenseman Jerry Hart slammed down his beer in the press box and delivered the news to his teammates that the Detroit Red Wings had shut out the Montreal Canadiens in the earlier game 1-0. with the knowledge that a win could mean a first-place overall finish, the Islanders bombed their rivals over the third period, starting with Mike Bossy's power play goal 16 seconds in. Bossy would score again in the third, as would Brian Trottier, to seal the game. Individually, the game was a bonanza for the Islanders. Bossy's two goals included his 69th of the season, the second highest mark in NHL history for a forward at the time. With a goal and an assist, Brian Trottier finished atop the scoring leaderboard with 134 points on 47 goals and a league-leading 87 helpers. And Dennis Potvin's two assists would make him only the second defenseman in NHL history to score 100 points in a season. Most important, with a record of 51-15-14 and 116 points, the New York Islanders finished first in the NHL, 1 point ahead of the three-time defending cup champion Montreal Canadiens. The Islanders also finished atop the NHL in scoring with 358 goals for, and were second in goals against with 214, just 10 more than league-leading Montreal. Their ascendancy to the top of the heap was a monumental achievement for a club just 7 seasons removed from one of the worst expansion years ever. Defenseman Dave Lewis was among the revelers when he credited his coach with defining the Islanders' style of play. Quote, "Al's system. That was the key. You can say Boss won the game, but we won with the system. The system gave Boss a chance to score those goals. The system, that's the bond between coach and management." The Islanders had indeed come a long way in the NHL. They earned their first place overall finish. But the truth was put on the table by venerable sports columnist Dave Anderson, who wrote in the New York Times, quote, "The Islanders' championship won't mean much unless they also win the Stanley Cup." To start that quest, Arbour made the decision to stick with a formula that had worked for the regular season. He would alternate goalies Billy Smith and Glenn Resch for every game. The rotation resulted in Resch winning 26 games in the regular season and Smith winning 25. They had the second and fourth best goals against averages in the NHL that season, respectively. As long as the club kept winning and the goalies themselves were happy and felt like they were part of a winning team, the coach saw no reason to change anything. The notoriously prickly Smith said of the rotation, quote, "It's beautiful as far as I'm concerned. I like what Al has in mind this time. It suits me just fine." One change Arbour did make was allowing his players to stay at their homes during the playoffs. Previous years, the team stayed together at a motel. Arbour told Newsday, quote, "I think we're all more mature. Besides, I got tired of the wives sneaking in." Throughout all of the changes and non-changes, one massive element remained in the room. The loss to the Maple Leafs a year earlier still hung over the Islanders like a massive wet blanket. Nystrom said, quote, "We were looking beyond Toronto. We won't be doing that again. But there was something else. I don't want to say we were pushed around, but we were beaten to the puck quicker. They seemed to get in our way faster. We learned a lesson." Ed Westfall, who announced that he would be retiring at the end of the season, looked at the team's overall psyche. Quote, "We've had a tendency in the past to think like underdogs and be successful. Now we've got to be successful thinking like a favorite." Finishing first overall gave the Islanders a bye into the quarterfinal series every team wanted. The Chicago Blackhawks, who won the Smythe Division with an anemic 29-36-15 record, finished 43 points behind the Islanders in the standings. Arbour, as superstitious as he was detailed, instructed his players to purposefully mess with Chicago goalie Tony Esposito's carefully curated piles of snow outside his crease. The coach knew this tactic would drive one of the league's best netminders crazy, so he made it a strategy going forward. He also had the players work in some new breakout patterns that he had devised, which might have been a little too much. Bob Nystrom said, quote, "To know where you're supposed to be going, you need a calculator and a roadmap." Arbour even admitted that his voluminous reports on every player in the NHL might have been a little overkill, saying, quote, "I think I have too many notes. I can't overload my guys with information. Besides, I'm not the neatest guy around." The very mediocre Blackhawks didn't stand much of a chance against any of the division winners, and the Islanders made short work of them, sweeping the series in 4 straight. They outscored Chicago 14-3 overall, going 183 minutes without giving up a goal. Mike Bossy set a team record by scoring 5 goals in the series, and Dennis Potvin had 3 goals and 4 assists. But Arbour wasn't about to take his foot off the gas. He called a 2-hour practice after Game 1's 6-2 win, and called the grind against the desperate, tight-checking Blackhawks in Game 4, quote, "probably our worst game of the series." Chicago coach Bob Pulford praised his team's work ethic, but conceded to reality. quote, "The team that we played is the best in hockey, and they have the record to prove it. I've said it before, and the man we just lost to, Al Arbor, feels the same way. Defense wins championships." After the Blackhawks series, Arbor was named the Hockey News NHL Coach of the Year, and now he faced a new task. The Islanders and Rangers had seemed to be on a collision course all season long. While the Islanders were trying to finally get over the hump and put a big silver cap on all the success they've had over the last four seasons, the young Rangers were still basking in the glow of new coach Fred Shiro, who turned them into a hard-working, cohesive unit. Now the rivals were set to meet in the semifinals, with a trip to the Stanley Cup final on the line. Before the series began, each team was respectful of the other. The Islanders' victory over the Rangers in their first playoff series in 1975 was a distant memory at this point. The clubs had changed so much that it didn't mean a hill of beans. The harshest words before the series came from an unlikely source, when Brian Trottier called the ice at Madison Square Garden terrible. This was the moment the Islanders had been building for, a chance for them to erase the playoff failures of the past and push forward. And in Game 1, they fell flat on their faces, losing 4-1 in a game they were never really in. By their own admission, they looked bored and didn't shoot enough. Arbor said, quote, "That could have been our worst game of the year," and criticized his club for being, quote, "tentative all over the ice." Meanwhile, the Rangers looked like the stars who were meant to be there. They kept a close watch on Mike Bossy when he didn't have the puck, a tip given to Rangers center Phil Esposito from Flyers counterpart Bobby Clark in their previous series. Goalie John Davidson was spectacular, but he wasn't overtasked, making 21 saves on 22 shots. Chigo Rushi, on the other hand, stopped 34 of the Rangers' 38 shots. For Game 2, Arbor kept his goalie rotation going and started Billy Smith, who was beaten by the Rangers' Walt Kachuk just 3 minutes in. The Islanders were once again lethargic, and worse, their top line of Trottier, Gillies, and Bossy couldn't generate a thing against the Rangers' defending. But tied at 3 in overtime, Dennis Potvin gave his team some breathing room by scoring the game-winning goal off a cluster of bodies in front of the net. Nassau Coliseum went crazy, and Potvin was mobbed by his teammates. The win was a big one for the Islanders, as Potvin admitted, quote, "The Rangers have instilled fear in us." One of the chief architects of that fear wasn't Rangers head coach Fred Shiro, but assistant coach Mike Nikoluk. Having assistants wasn't the norm for NHL coaches in 1979, but both the Rangers and Islanders were among the first to make use of a second voice on the bench. Al Arbor had former defenseman Burt Marshall, who, besides being on the same wavelength as Arbor in practices, would watch games from the last row of seats, take notes, then run them to the locker room in between periods. Marshall said of his job, quote, "I just tell Al what I've seen, and he figures out if he can use it." Mike Nikoluk ran the Rangers' practices, picked the starting lineups, and was more of a strategist, cooking up ways to stop the Islanders' vaunted attack. So far, his strategies were working, and he wasn't afraid to say how. Nikoluk told the New York Times, quote, "The Islanders didn't experience during the regular season the kind of pressure we're putting on them. Our guys are fresher because we only skate them for 30 seconds at a time. Now, when the Islanders are rushed, they give up the puck." The short shift strategy was especially effective on the penalty kill, which had kept the Trio Grande off the board by coming at Bossy, Trottier, and Gillies in waves while they spent over a minute trying to formulate a goal. Arbor, who had seen it all in his hockey career, wasn't impressed by Nikoluk's bragging. The Islanders' coach felt his team just needed to pick up their options quicker, saying, quote, "Short shifts aren't necessary. Execution is. They want to execute. We want to execute. That's what it comes down to." In Game 3 at the Garden, only one team was able to execute, and it wasn't the Islanders. The Rangers took a 2-1 series lead with a 3-1 win in which they outshot the Islanders 32-17. The most glaring number was 0, which was the number of shots put up by Bossy, Trottier, and Gillies for the game. And Arbor was concerned. Quote, "Our big line has to get going. Maybe they get too fancy. We can't win with just 12-14 players." The line mates knew they were letting their coach down. Gillies said of the Rangers, quote, "They're checking us off our feet." Bossy said he hadn't had a good chance yet, and Trottier felt they just needed to work harder. Unfortunately, the Rangers weren't about to let them. Making matters worse was that Rangers goalie John Davidson had been a rock through the first three games. Although he hadn't been tested by screens and rebounds, his relaxed demeanor and beyond steady play was definitely in the Islanders' heads. After Game 3, Dennis Potvin observed, quote, Davidson comes out of the net 3 or 4 feet and we don't look up. We should go around him. Down in the series, Arbor was at a crossroads when it came to his season-long goalie rotation. Resch had been in net for both the losses to the Rangers, but was anxious to right the ship. Both he and Smith were confident they can get a win in Game 4 and left it up to the coach to decide who would start. Ever the topical comedian, Resch said, quote, Smitty and I are like co-presidents. Al is like the Senate. Arbor's bigger concern was up front, where his team was mostly shooting blanks in the series, with one surprising exception. Mike Kosicki had complained publicly about not having a big enough role on the Islanders and was even benched in the opening game of the series. But after 3 games, Kosicki was one of the few Islanders showing any life out there. When asked if he'd sit Kosicki again, Arbor snapped, quote, bench him now? Are you kidding? Kosicki's newly found confidence paid off in Game 4, where he picked up assists on goals by John Tinelli and Billy Harris. Ultimately, it took overtime again for the Islanders to secure a series-tying victory, this time on a bizarre goal by Bob Nystrom. As the puck slid out of the Islanders' zone, Nystrom found himself on a breakaway. Davidson came 10 feet out of his net to challenge, and as the two collided, the puck bounced high in the air and behind the goalie. Nystrom was able to sidestep Davidson, stay on his skates, guide the puck to the ice with his hand, and whack the puck into the completely unattended cage.
Game was tied at 2, and into overtime we went. Now, it didn't take long for the Isles to cash in and win their second overtime game. It was a breakaway. Davidson came out, took the risk, and lost. Bobby Nystrom put in the easy goal. The Isles have tied the series at 2 games apiece. And right now, Marv Albert is standing out there at the Garden live, and I believe he has Mr. Nystrom. Marv?
All right, Larry, and here is an exhausted Bob Nystrom, the hero of tonight's game. Bob, did you think Davidson would come out at you to surprise you?
Well, when I first looked up and I didn't see any defensemen, I was really amazed, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and then he decided to make his charge, and I think it was the best play that he could have, you know, made, but luckily enough, the puck just popped over him, and I just shoveled it into the net.
Nystrom called the goal the most important of his career, to that point anyway. But the Islanders were far from out of the woods. Thanks to a pregame players-only meeting, they played more loosely in Game 4 than they had previously, even as the Rangers kept up their stifling defense. The top line had still only accounted for 4 shots on goal between Bossy, Gillies, and Trottier, and the power play was still largely ineffective. The win was enough to convince Arbor to break up his goalie rotation. Smith got the starting nod for Game 5 after being in net for Game 4. Tied at 3 with about 2.5 minutes to go in Game 5, Rangers forward Anders Hedberg beat a sprawling Smith for the deciding goal, putting the Islanders down 3-2 in the series. Even in Nassau Coliseum, the Islanders' top line was a no-show, getting 0 points and just 6 shots on goal between them. Trottier, Bossy, and Gillies had scored just once in the series way back in Game 1. And facing an elimination game at Madison Square Garden, it was beyond time that they broke out. Arbor was described after Game 5 by Newsday's Pat Calabria as, quote, his face was a clenched fist. His words hissed in breaths of steam. While he absolved Smith of the loss, Arbor had only a stern ultimatum for his top line. Quote, I'm not going to name names. Figure it out. In their next practice, coach reshuffled his forward, putting Lorne Henning between Bossy and Gillies, and skating Trottier with Gary Howitt and an injured but still penalty-killing Ed Westfall. They also made changes on the power play, which had gone an astonishing 0-for-20 in the first 5 games of the series. Arbor decided early that Chico Resch, who was hungry to get back in, would start in goal. Outwardly, some Islanders remained confident, with Dennis Potvin channeling John Wayne and saying, quote, we've got them right where we want them. Bossy believed that they had been the better team in Game 5. Chico Resch, as usual, had a lot to say, and openly wondered, quote, there was some deep-seated psychological problem we have. About 9 minutes into Game 6, the Islanders were able to get 2 things that they had gone without so far. Goal by Mike Bossy on the power play.
Pierce on backboard, whips it ahead for Trottier, so the Islanders get up quickly. He's in across the Ranger line, breaks one on Brechner, cuts side of the net, moves behind the goal, where he's hit by Vadney, who ties him up, and Vadney takes it away, looks to clear, cannot. Captain Bat popping at the point, cross-eyes Pearson has the shot, he shoots, it is deflected, loose, and Bossy scores! Mike Bossy has finally scored a goal, and the Islanders lead it 1-0.
A good play by Dennis Potvin on the left point, getting it across to Stephan Pearson. Pearson taking the shot. John Davidson made the save. Pierre Plante almost on top of Potvin for the steal. The shot going through. Brian Trottier deflected it on the way in and went right over to the left wing position where Bossy backhanded it. John Davidson got a little piece of it off his chest and it went into the cage.
But two Rangers goals, just under 4 minutes apart in the second period, one by Don Murdoch and one by Ron Greschner, sealed the Islanders' fate. They had just 22 shots for the game, and John Davidson stopped all but one. And another season for Long Island's hockey team came to a close short of the Stanley Cup.
Free by Gillies, Nystrom stationed in front. Pass out for Poppin, throws to the corner to Trottier. 3 seconds, Trottier cross-ice, left away by Kachuk, and that is it! The New York Rangers have defeated the New York Islanders by the score of 2-1. They have come up with the huge upset by knocking off the Islanders in six, and it is Christmas Eve here at Madison Square Garden. Rangers on the ice, congratulating one another. Here is the traditional handshaking as the Islanders have been knocked out of it. The team that led the National Hockey League with most points during the course of the regular season, upset by the New York Rangers.
For a full season, the Islanders had played for one reason: to break from the shadow of their embarrassing first-round loss to the Maple Leafs in the 1978 playoffs. Their fear and anger propelled them to earn the best record in the NHL. Now, a year later, they had suffered an even more devastating defeat, one in their own backyard to a team that simply smothered them defensively the way they used to. It wasn't toughness or fisticuffs that caused the Islanders to back down. It was being out-hustled by a Rangers team that came in waves and wasn't afraid of challenging the best team in the NHL. Al Arbour's post-game remarks were short. Quote, "The big edge was that they outworked us. That was the secret. They played loose and we didn't. The Rangers had everything to win and we had everything to lose." The weight of lofty expectations without being hardened by failure was cited in a column by Newsday's Steve Jacobson, who wrote, quote, "Islanders fans don't know about suffering. Losing to the Rangers, not winning the Stanley Cup now in the seventh year of the Islanders existing, is the only bad thing that has ever happened to the Islanders from a fan standpoint. For 7 consecutive years, they have improved their record to the point they had the best record in the league. It was their year. Their only crime may have been leading their fans on." The man at the top of the organization, Bill Torrey, wasn't about to apologize for thinking he had a winner on his hands. Facing yet another devastating defeat, Torrey was contemplative, even in the immediate aftermath. Quote, "I have varying emotions, like disgust and outrage, but I do want to take a lot of time and think things over. I told the players not to be too harsh on themselves." He also wondered about the measure of success and what makes a season good or bad. He reportedly asked Arbour on the bus on the ride back to Long Island after Game 6, quote, "It's a funny thing how the world works. You lose 4 out of 6 games and people get down. Which is the greater accomplishment, winning this series or how we did over 80 games?" Meanwhile, Al Arbour had some thinking to do. The coach took the loss to the Rangers very, very hard. He struggled with constantly replaying the games in his head, seeing missed passes and pucks off of posts over and over. He openly wondered why his team was so inconsistent and oftentimes unimpassioned all season long. And he wondered if he had even wanted to continue to coach them. Sources told Newsday's Pat Calabria that Arbour was unsure if he wanted to return to the Islanders, despite having 3 seasons left on that contract extension that he signed earlier in the season. When the subject came up in a 2-hour interview with Newsday after the season, Arbour refused to confirm or deny the report. But his assessment after the loss of the Rangers was pointed. Quote, "We lack something in the dressing room. We've been lacking it for a while. I've tried, but there comes a time when the players have to take care of that themselves. There's been a lack of enthusiasm. I think they've taken things for granted. They've forgotten that when you take things for granted, somebody takes something away from you." When news filtered back to the Islanders about their coach potentially walking away, it left them in shock. To a man, each wanted him to stay. Within a chorus of, "Really?" and "Holy cow," the players knew that quitting wasn't in Arbour's nature, but shouldering the blame for losses was. Bob Bourne admitted that Arbour would sometimes direct players to make him the public scapegoat for their failures. Quote, "I can't remember all the times he told us to blame him when it was our fault." Bob Nystrom was sympathetic to his coach and hoped he was just going through a phase. The winger told reporters, quote, "That's really sad. He He's the type of guy to do that, to wonder if it's his fault, and that's a shame. It's nobody's fault but the players. I just hope that he's depressed right now and thinking too much. I hate to think of him not being here. Chico Resch, as usual, used a colorful metaphor to see Arbor's side of things. Quote, "We're like a child that you have to keep tight reins on. I'm sure Al is thinking he's done everything he can, and he's right." Arbor may have been unsure about his work with the Islanders, but NHL awards voters were not. On May 19, 1979, Al Arbor was named the winner of the Jack Adams Trophy as NHL Coach of the Year. At a luncheon at the Plaza Hotel in New York City, Arbor accepted his trophy and the $1,000 prize while being flanked by Fred Shiro and Scotty Bowman, the two coaches whose teams were currently playing for the Stanley Cup the Islanders thought they'd be playing for. And once again, Al Arbor was overshadowed by others. Shiro, who came in second in Adams' voting behind Arbor, told the guests a touching story about how his two-game stint on the Canadiens roster in the late 1950s not only led to his first coaching job, but also meeting his future wife. Meanwhile, Bowman, whose Habs had a 2-1 lead on the Rangers en route to a 5-game series win and a 4th straight championship, talked about his old player and colleague in St. Louis and how hard he knew Arbor took the Islanders' latest playoff loss. Quote, "I know this is a tough time for Al. When the playoffs are going on, people forget what you accomplished in the regular season. The Islanders had a great season." Arbor, perhaps still feeling conflicted about how the season played out, kept his acceptance speech short. Quote, "I don't have as much to say as Scotty and Freddie. I'd like to congratulate both, though, for the great hockey their teams are playing in the playoffs. I have no alibis. I'm proud of my team. We'll keep fighting on." Other Islanders picking up awards after the 78-79 season were Brian Trottier, who won the Hart Trophy as the most valuable player and the Art Ross Trophy as the league's leading scorer, and Dennis Potvin, who won his third Norris Trophy. For more information on those seasons, check out our first season episode about Trottier's incredible year and our upcoming episode on Potvin's back-to-back Norris Trophy victories. After a few more weeks of thinking, Al Arbor indeed decided to fight on alongside his Islanders. He told Newsday in early June that he, quote, didn't want to leave the job unfinished. He admitted to being deeply disappointed about the season and unsure about how serious he was about leaving. Quote, "But then I remembered how much work it took to build this team, and I didn't want to walk away from it." Arbor and Bill Torrey had an amateur draft to plan for, with another training camp right around the corner. And the New York Islanders would try in the 1979-80 season to win that elusive first Stanley Cup, with Radar back behind the bench. And we know what happened next. It's easy to look at the 4 straight cups, 19 consecutive playoff series victories, tons of Hall of Fame players, NHL records, and the Jack Adams Trophy as key components to Al Arbor's incredible legacy as one of the greatest coaches in hockey history. But the lone season in which he was named the NHL's best coach was a bittersweet one for the man. Despite a first-place finish for a franchise that was still just 7 years old, Arbor spent the entire season worrying and pacing and chain-smoking over every mistake and dip in intensity. The whole ordeal ended in a loss so devastating that Arbor considered stepping away from the game altogether. Many fans at the time probably wished he had. More inconsistency to start the 1979-80 season, played without an injured Dennis Potvin, wouldn't have changed any doubters' minds. But by the end of that season, Al Arbor's head coaching resume would be complete. And he would add on more and more and more on top of that. But without the triumph and heartbreak of the 1978-79 season, it's likely that the glory of 80-83 doesn't happen. And the dynasty definitely wouldn't have happened without Al Arbor. Islanders fans would have to wait 40 more years for another Jack Adams Trophy winner to stand behind their bench. Barry Trotz came to the Islanders just 2 weeks after leading the Washington Capitals to the Stanley Cup for the first time in their franchise history. When management disagreed on how much his next contract should be, Trotz resigned and the Islanders and new general manager Lou Lamoriello were there to happily sign the veteran coach. With expectations low following the departure of star John Tavares to the Toronto Maple Leafs as a free agent, Trotz completely transformed the Islanders on the ice from a defensive disaster to a forechecking, shot-suppressing buzzsaw. The team had its best finish since the Dynasty days, and even before their stunning first-round sweep of the Pittsburgh Penguins, Trotz was the no-brainer pick for the 2019 Jack Adams Trophy.
I'd like to thank, first of all, the New York Islanders organization for giving me a chance. especially Lou Lamoriello, the ownership team, my coaching staff. This is a team award. You have to understand that from a coaching standpoint. I have some incredible coaches. They did a great job. Our video coaches, our trainers, the players, their buy-in. You can't have success in this league without the buy-in of the players, and they were incredible, my leadership group. And most of all, when you have a team, you have a family, and I am blessed to have one of the greatest families. My wife, Kim, Shallon, Tyson, Tiana, and my little buddy, Nolan. You know, they're the rock. And I'm very blessed to be in this. Thank you so much, and go Islanders.
Barry Trotz knew all about the importance of Al Arbor in Islanders lore, and his occasional words of wisdom would often sound like something his predecessor would have said. One of them was a very simple idea. Quote, "Sometimes you have to fail a little bit to have success." Islanders Award Winners is written, produced, and edited by Dan Saracini. Special thanks to Kevin Schultz. Visit Kevin's shop at VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, and more featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. VintageIceHockey.com also has our Al Arbor t-shirt. Now a portion of the sales go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. Be sure to visit LighthouseHockey.com every day and subscribe to Islanders Anxiety Podcasts. Sign up at Patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety for even more. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Islanders Anxiety Podcasts are part of the Fans First Sports Network. To learn more, log on to fansfirstsports.com.